Pizza Noir by Denver Day, Book 1, Chapter 6. I went ahead working the phones in earnest. Vancouver's freeze block slash cricket bat ordeal was the biggest quasi-Indo-Canadian sports-themed mess I'd ever seen. With two girls, female victims 20 and 21 on the business end of it. Age and gender demographics of the victims were about the same all up and down the coast, typically 18 to 22-year-old lady nightclub dancers, young and bloody either in the parking lot or dressing rooms at their shifts in. Our case was the only one involving any male victims so far. Anyway, Vancouver detectives there did recover the weapon, the freeze block duct tape to a cricket bat, a former spanking paddle that had been intentionally perforated in some former incarnation of use, but it was no good for fingerprints, and what might have been the victim's footprints were now indistinguishable from what might have been the perpetrator's, and it had been raining like an MF up there all week anyway. Wintry mix. It might as well have happened 3 decades ago as far as the Vancouver weather was concerned. And in a strip club parking lot full of high people of questionable means and questionable motives, there were no witnesses. Longview looked like a 357 hollow point or better. She was the last person out of the building there, the victim, a stripper and key-holding employee, a stripper manager of some sort, in the dressing room, and nobody found her until they came to open up the bar around noon the next day. Apparently no witnesses, evidently no witnesses of similar caliber in Salem. Statements indicated the girls were filtering out, wrapping up their shifts, and all of a sudden, one of them comes around the corner to see another one of them shot dead laying on the ground, but it was loud as hell in there. Nobody could even recall even hearing any shots fired. I guess. Seattle involved a single 12-gauge shotgun blast to the face at close range. To the lady, which totally disintegrated the head of the victim. Some lead field load and one anonymous spent high-velocity shell at the scene of the parking lot. Like most of the other locations, there were no eyewitnesses forthcoming, just people surprised by a body. Pattern was clearly emerging, and the perpetrators of these homicides were using crowds or darkness or general drug-addled shift-change confusion as cover for their quick work. Portland was a shotgun also to the chest at close range this time, also in the parking lot, blowing an 8-inch hole right through the victim. None of her peers saw that happen either. High-velocity field load also. This was probably a 20-gauge, but at the scene, there was no spent shell. Portland. Beaverton, like ours, was a stabbing with an edged instrument of some sort. It was a box cutter razor. Left in the victim, whom was found in her vehicle the next morning when the club's cleanup crew arrived. In Eugene, the victim was run through with a cheap plastic-handled machete, also left in the victim in a locked restroom stall, to be subsequently discovered by some patron. Moseyed in there. Nobody saw shit there either, but there was an anonymous swish of blood where someone rolled out from under the wall of the stall the lady died in. Medford's perpetrator was a Third Reich-like .22 caliber right into the ear. Low noise. The victim was low caliber, low noise. The victim was slumped over a coke mirror at a booth in a loud and crowded strip club. Several others sitting around her at the same time, in the same booth, doing the same stuff off the same mirror, but nobody could name anything seen there either. 1 minute she's right there, and the next minute she's slumped over dead, said. Someone from over the wall of an abutting booth, or someone crawled under the table, local investigators said, in these crowded dark spots, and all these people had to do was blink or turn their bodies slightly to cover themselves with a cloak of night. Going south, California's cases were no different than those in the Great Northwest. Santa Cruz, another 22 into the year, were surprisingly, in this case, the bartender saw the whole thing. Got to no avail, forensic relevance or help. Some dude in an overcoat walks in, orders a beer, drinks it, moseys over to a stripper sitting at the bar, normal enough, puts one in her ear, and is out the door before the barkeep can get over the bar. He didn't even have a good guess at height or race of the assailant, nothing. He was blinded. Sunnyvale, another 22 in the year, a girl sitting in the dressing room stall in the back of the house. dead calm. Nobody saw or heard anything. Both Oxnard and San Jose, a dancer was picked off while on stage, head shot. No suspects. Spent 44 caliber shell found in the floor of the club in San Jose. San Francisco was a buck knife in the room of an hotel next door to the victim's nightclub of employment. Room had been booked in her name using her credit card. Front desk reported only seeing her when she checked in, though. No boss. In Los Gatos, an all-new dancer found her friend in the parking lot, having gone to investigate after the girl had headed out to her car to fetch her cigarettes and didn't return. Blunt force trauma with a metal baseball bat. Santa Ana with a sawed-off 12-gauge. Left right there at the scene, in the short-order kitchen of an all-new bar with the serial number scrubbed clean on. Cook back there was surprised at the body as anybody else when he nearly tripped over it. And the sawed-off shotgun. In Long Beach, a girl fell dead on stage, and the autopsy showed recent ingestion of a significant amount of rat poison. At her last meal, which was fast food, Los Angeles was a pre-after-hours party speedball overdose in the dressing room. And the last two were different, potentially unrelated, I guess. In San Diego, two topless girls had just disappeared at some point in the night and remained gone and went in Rome. So ours was the only one that involved men down. Santa Cruz was the only place where anybody actually claimed to have seen it happen. San Diego was the only place with no corpora delicti. San Diego was also the only agency that claimed to have a solid lead, the tenant said, so I called down there first. Detective Joe Lopez of the San Diego City Force. My chief tells me this is part of a greater incident, but as you know, strippers do in fact disappear from time to time as a point of order. San Diego is not like the ongoing shitstorm down the road in TJ, but it happens. Anyway, he said, here's what we got. 2 weeks ago, we had a brouhaha between a girl's roller derby squad and some of the girls working at a club down here, and one of the derby girls ended up in a box. You're familiar with women's roller derby. Bank track, riot girls, skater circuit, that seemed to us business as usual, but I've started researching that derby geograph further because of the possible connection to Saturday morning's killings. The girl killed was a member of the Bloody Rollers outfit out of Phoenix, and there was a bank track derby circuit gathering out there that weekend. Among many other squads, the Bloody Rollers were in from out of town. Bloody Rollers comprise a decent collective felony rap, he continues. On the other hand, many of their rosters are Knights Lily White. But they're all pretty tough gals, and there's a lot of allegiance and rivalries and trizz and general drama to be expected among the teams. In the circuit at large, the night the girl died, she and or members of her party got crossways with some or another group of strippers, and their people quickly became shark soup. But to say this set off some mass revenge killing of 21 unrelated stripper victims all the way from here to Canada might be asking too much of the imagination. This is stranger than fiction, though, in any way. Rather than strict revenge, it's more likely that some group might have just used it as an excuse to go totally nanners. Anyway, moving forward, I appreciate your input on this, I answered him. My lieutenant's contacting the Seattle Bureau. What so the posties don't shit rolling donuts on us for failure to notify them about an interstate case? I said, so fair warning, they might be in touch with your office in the morning. And because aside from your lead, nobody has squat. In the meantime, I'd love to see the file on the skate girl homicide. All right, I'll fax you some stuff, he answered me. I started digging around on the Bloody Rollers and the bank track circuit in general, and I've got a call into Maricopa County regarding their hometown girls, and I'll get Phoenix in on this hayride, too. I'll give everybody a teleconference for briefing and debriefing of all the agencies involved so far. ASAP, he said. Spread the word on that for me, please, and if you didn't hear from me by tomorrow afternoon, call me back, Lopez said. What about the media? The beans are still in the pot for now. I guess the cases are far enough apart for local media outlets not to have noticed the pattern yet. Sooner or later they might will, though. As for the posties, it would be a general exception to their general rule to contact the media. I said, anyway, just be prepared. I phoned you first, since you've got the only lead. We only found out yesterday that this was both bad and nationwide. Next, I called Santa Cruz, where the investigator said he'd interviewed the barkeep the day before, and surprise, 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 it had happened in a dark bar, loud bar, crowded bar, smoky bar, full of dark, loud, crowded, smoky bar people. And their witness couldn't confirm gender, race, age, size, weight, or height. The person working the door also saw an aunt, Jack Diddley. Someone blended in, moved quickly, mixed with a little element of surprise and a lot of background noise. Snake Eyes at the only location with the witness then. Gave up the phones for now.